This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey, very good morning to everybody. It is 6 minutes past seven in the morning on the 14th of November 2019. I'm Chuang, joined by Wong Xiaoning. And guess what? Global markets are reacting to the latest signals from the US-China trade war following, guess who, President Donald Trump's speech at the Economic Club of New York on Tuesday.
Yeah, as a result, amazingly, US markets actually edged higher after he spoke. The Dow was spurred by Disney stock following the launch of its latest streaming services, Disney Plus. So the Dow was up 0.3, S&P 500 up 0.07, while the Nasdaq was actually down 0.05%.
In Asian markets, though, markets interpreted Trump's speech more negatively. The Nikkei was down by nearly 1%. The Hang Seng was down by nearly 2%, although one might imagine that Hong Kong is actually dropping on other reasons other than Trump. The Shanghai Comp was down by 0.3% and the Singapore Straits Times Index was down by nearly 1%.
Meanwhile, our KLCI was down 0.8%. You know, as usual.
Of course. When the markets go zig, we go zag, and sometimes we go zigger more and zagger sometimes.
Well, we used to be the more defensive market. We theoretically should come down less when the whole region comes down. But it's funny. I mean, even when markets go up, we don't go up. Then now when markets come down, we come down together the same quantum.
I'm glad we can find the humor in this. But
Go figure,
right? So for more clarity on this whole issue, we have on the line Tony Nash. He's the chief executive of Complete Intelligence. Now, Tony, thank you for again joining us. Now, Fed President Jerome Powell gave testimony to the Joint Economic Congress yesterday. What did you glean from his speech? And were there any indication of rate cuts as America heads into elections next year?
Yeah, you know, you may get some sort of rate activity, but I think the closer you get to the election, the less likely you are, unless there's some sort of catastrophic event. So, you know, we may, if there is any movement, you may get things like a repo move like we had last week. I don't necessarily think there's going to be huge rate cut movements, maybe one or two next year in, say, second quarter or something. What was interesting with the Powell discussion was Congress was on him about U.S. deficits and spending, and he pushed it back onto them. Because it's not a Fed issue, that's a Congress issue. So when Powell goes in front of U.S. Congress, he tends to get blamed for a lot more than the Fed can actually do.
And since we are still on the topic of U.S., elections are coming out soon. So how much of the rhetoric that Trump is currently sprouting with regards to tariffs on China is related to that? And how do you think equity markets will trade in the meantime?
You know, it's interesting looking at the trade war and trade discussions. Markets have rallied pretty steadily as things have intensified. So, you know, I don't necessarily think that markets are saying this, partly because of the substitutional aspect of most of the manufactured goods that come out of China. Supply chains are rotating other places. There is not much of an inflationary impact in the U.S., so Americans aren't absorbing the cost of this. It's the manufacturing side in China that's absorbing it. So of the, say, 25% tariffs, 23% of that is absorbed. This was a Goldman Sachs study from a month or so ago. 23% of that is absorbed by the Chinese exporter. So you're not necessarily getting a lot of backlash from the U.S. In fact, a lot of Americans support what Trump is saying in the trade discussions. So what you're hearing overseas is not really what we're seeing in the U.S. on the ground in terms of support.
Yeah, Tony, when you talk about stocks in America, clearly you are right, because the S&P is up by 23% year-to-date, the Dow Jones is up by 19% year-to-date, then the Nasdaq is nearly up by 28% year-to-date. What's your prognosis going to the final quarter of 2019, especially given the fact that Donald Trump wants Jerome Powell to drop rates another round, even though we've had a 75 basis point cut already?
Well, we're expecting some pretty tough times over the next month and a half. That has more to do with retirees taking their money out of the market than it really does have the a reflection on actual economic activity. So because there are so many baby boomers in the U.S. retiring and they're pulling their funds out of the market, they have to because of the structure of retirement regulation here in the U.S., you'll see more selling in late November and December than you see in other times of the year. So in the same way last year we saw kind of a tantrum in U.S. equities in the second half of December, we wouldn't be surprised to see similar activity this year as well.
And let's look at oil prices, right? Because the International Energy Agency says that U.S. shale oil production will shape global energy markets in the coming year. Do you share this view, or will other factors actually impact oil price direction in 2020?
Well, what's interesting about shale is that it really is almost like a manufacturing process. So what they're trying to do is really have steady output and consistent cash flows for those shale operators. So it seems to me that crude prices, or it seems to us that crude prices, are relatively range-bound. And so they are the change agent in global crude prices. You know, we saw with the drone attack in Saudi Arabia in September, there was a 1 or 2 day spike in crude prices, but beyond that, there really wasn't prolonged impact. So we don't expect a supply shock sufficiently large to impact crude prices to the upside, you know, on a dramatic basis.
All right, Tony, thanks ever so much for your time. That was Tony Nash, Chief Executive of Complete Intelligence. Now, from fossil fuels and the discussion therein, we turn to clean energy and battery-powered cars specifically. Now, Elon Musk, the founder and Chief Executive of Tesla, which is obviously the car maker, has announced this week that it wants to build its first European plant in Berlin. A person familiar with the matter, as opposed to one that is unfamiliar with the matter, said that Tesla will build its Model 3 and Model Y vehicles at the German plant and aims to start production in 2021.
Yeah, Elon Musk has long said that Tesla will build a gigafactory in Europe, but no country has been announced until Tuesday. It follows the company's expansion into Shanghai, where Tesla's first China-made Model 3 are now rolling off the production line. Berlin has become, of course, the centre for Germany's push into the new mobility services when Daimler and BMW teamed up to create a new JV based on the group in Berlin. And VW's ride-hailing group Moya is also based in Berlin.
Yeah, of course. The Gigafactory is named after the word giga, the unit of measurement representing billions. Now, of course, Tesla's got one Gigafactory in Reno, Nevada, the second one in Shanghai, and the third will be in Berlin, Germany, because German engineering is famous the world over. That's why I think Elon, Mr. Musk to you and Mila, wants to build a factory there.
But it's not like he never had teething problems with any of his Gigafactories. Some of them were delayed, and if I rewind like 2-3 years ago, there were production issues, especially on the Model 3, there were delays. So a lot of emphasis on this Gigafactory, but sometimes it has the potential of disappointing.
Yeah, early salvos never were without their teething problems. And hopefully it'll prompt other German car makers to really get their electric plans into gear. Now, this other nugget from the news items, Alibaba. I think they're New York Stock Exchange listed,
yes,
right? And now they're doing a secondary share listing in Hong Kong, which is a real fillip to Hong Kong, clearly because of the protests and all the big declines on the stock exchange. And, well, they're going to do a listing there. They're going to try and raise as much as $13 billion. And there's even a green shoe option, Wong Shoning.
Oh.
That's right.
Well, I mean, they do need to kind of revive the capital markets in Hong Kong. It's been a relatively quiet year for them in terms of IPO. So Alibaba will give that little bit of push that maybe the Hong Kong Stock Exchange needs. Now, they said they will determine the deal's price on or around November 20th, and trading would probably start 4 days later. Now, it plans to use the proceeds to expand relatively into new businesses, Elimi, which is a food delivery, Fliggy, an online travel business, Youku, a popular Chinese online video platform, and it will also use the money to invest in cloud computing and offline retail. A lot of cute names there.
That's right. And of course, Alibaba is held by Jack Ma, and Jack Ma owns what is essentially China's most valuable company by market value, worth nearly $500 billion, which is, you know, I guess a small change, and a quarter of what I think, this Aramco might be worth in future. Now, they have reported a 40% rise in quarterly sales earlier this month, and on Monday set more records for its annual November 11th Singles Day, selling nearly $40 billion in goods and services. Well, goods, essentially, right?
Yes.
Have you ever bought?
No, there are services. You can actually buy vouchers for certain things. It's everything now.
Incredible, right?
Yes.
They are the extravaganza of extravaganza. But from one Chinese company that is doing really well, another Chinese company that is not doing as well, Tencent. Now, their fortunes have dimmed in comparison to Alibaba based on their latest quarterlies. Of course, Tencent is a Chinese social media company. Their profits, well, I wouldn't call it plummeted, because 13% is not a plummet, but it's a drop. 13%, right? Do you agree? 13% not a plummet?
Well, it depends on what market expectations are.
Correct. You see?
It's all relative.
You see?
Right?
That's what I mean. That's why we talk to you, Wong Shao Ning. Yep.
Anyway, the 13% was worse than anticipated. Huh? That's why the market is not happy by even the most pessimistic analysts. Now, Tencent saw its media advertising revenue shrink by 28% as basically marketers spend less due to economic downturn. Now, this is the bad part. The cost actually jumped 21% as Tencent purchased pricey content to feed into its Netflix-style service.
Yeah, does this streaming war is really, I mean, there's only going to be one or two survivors, right? And I think Bob Iger at Disney, he's also bet the house on streaming.
But for Tencent, a lot of their earnings come from this mobile gaming business, and there was a freeze on it by the Chinese government. So they're not in such a good space as, let's say, Alibaba, and they are also facing competition from up-and-coming ByteDance for internet traffic and advertising.
There's also these tricky political considerations, right? Tencent paid $1.5 billion for 5 years of exclusive streaming rights, but there's been also a potential suspension from the NBA broadcast because there was a media blackout in China after NBA figures tweeted support for the Hong Kong protest. You see, sports and politics, they're not most comfortable bedfellows.
No, they're not.
Okay, which also brings us to the forward sell on our poll. Now, BFM has, asked a very interesting question because we're asking listeners, how much are you willing to spend on video streaming services? Now, the options are between $20 to $50 ringgit, 20 to 50, 50 to 100, over 100, or nothing.
Okay.
Wong Shao Ning?
I'm between 20 and 50 because I'm a cheapo. In fact, if I could do nothing, I'll do nothing.
Okay. Well, stay tuned because we're going to be coming back with more news, including double barrel spendings, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.